Salutation by Nagarjuna to Buddha Shakyamuni. I proceed to the Buddha Shakyamuni who is enthused by great compassion and enthused by great compassion started teaching the concept of dependent origination in order to overcome all the perverted views. And it says in Nagarjuna's 27th chapter of Fruit Wisdom, he said, "You, the Buddha, was enthused by great compassion, start teaching the concept of dependent origination in order to overcome all the perverted faults. So to you, Buddha, I make prostration." So Nagarjuna here refers to Buddha Shakyamuni as someone, a being, who has been compassionate towards all sentient beings, like a mother who is compassionate and loving to her only child. And this Buddha, who has trained himself in the meritorious actions for three countless aeons in order to fulfill the benefits of all sentient beings. And then the Buddha, in order to benefit all sentient beings, he is employing the deeds of his voice, his speech of dependent origination, teaching the concept of dependent origination in order to avoid this negative or perverted thought, the wrong views. And then why is he doing that? Because he pointed to the mistaken idea or the ignorance as the root cause of all kinds of sufferings, like the suffering of sickness, aging, death, and so forth. So somebody who is really aspired to overcome all kinds of sufferings, then the Buddha said that it is through overcoming that ignorance, which is the root cause of all these sufferings, that you can possibly eradicate the sufferings. So in order to overcome this ignorance, the root cause of all sufferings, then he taught the concept of dependent origination. So this concept of dependent origination the Buddha taught is called as the holy dharma or the holy teachings. So then Nagarjuna says that to this Buddha who gave such a discourse on the concept of dependent origination, I make prostration. So the primary mistaken thought, so they are basically fourfold. The first one is the mistaken idea viewing those dirty or the contaminated and defiled things as pure, and then also viewing suffering as happiness or pleasure. Although in actuality, the contaminated or the defiled state of pleasurable experiences, they are of the suffering nature, but the ordinary beings perceive the default states of the pleasurable experiences as authentic or undefiled states of pleasurable experiences. And it is because of this that then one generates a sense of afflictive attachment and aversion. And then again, we see that these are all derived through the mistaken idea of the perceiving the transitory phenomena as permanent and eternal. It is because of this apprehension or this mistaken thinking that the transitory things exist as eternal or permanent that then one leads all the problems, the crisis in this world. And then also viewing the non-self as intrinsic or inherent self. So in order to overcome all these distorted ideas or views, the Buddha then taught the concept of dependent origination. Because when I understand how everything comes about through mere dependent origination, so naturally it'll help us eradicate the mistaken idea that things are something permanent, because it is not permanent, it is something dependent on something else. When there is a cause, when there is a change occurring in the cause, the result is no more going to be permanent, it's going to be changed as well. So, and then also, because of understanding that how everything is dependent on origination, so you understand as to how things are dependent on their respective causes. And when the causes are defiled, how can we possibly have a result which is pure? As such, it'll then lead you to understand our defiled states as defiled. This will help dispel the mistaken idea of the default state as pure. And then also, it will help us eradicate the mistaken idea of apprehending the self or things to be existing as intrinsic or independent existent. So because that everything is dependent on origination, it has no independent existence. Things' mode of existence should be by way of dependence on something else. So when we speak about how things are dependent on something else, so it has to be understood in two ways. One, by way of dependence on the causes, respective causes and conditions. So, and then the second level of dependent origination is by way of dependence on the designative basis, the aggregates, the basis upon which that thing is designated. So, when somebody is unable to posit this understanding, or when somebody is unable to understand the concept of mere designation or mere dependent origination, this person is compelled to posit to some kind of thing as something very solid and concrete and independent. And yet, in actuality, even if however hard the person may try to posit that concrete or solid thing, and yet it is totally untenable to hold that idea, because when you're really in a very reasonable or rational way, when you are to examine as to what that solid thing is, it cannot be traceable, cannot be identified. So, through realizing that something cannot be pointed to as something concrete, solid, so the only alternative by way to establish the existence of that should be by way of mere designation, by way of mere dependent origination. So, as such, this understanding of dependent origination to a subtler sense should be understood as mere labeling or mere designation or mere imputation. So, and this concept of dependent origination, this concept of the mere designation, is something the Buddha Shakyamuni has actually taught for the first time in the entire universe. It is because of this that Nagarjuna, the 150 AD saint scholar, so he addressed Buddha Shakyamuni as the unexcelled teacher who taught the concept of dependent origination for the first time in the entire universe, which has the capacity to overcome all perverted faults. So, and also, we have to understand that as no sooner we speak about the concept of dependent origination, it should have the capacity to overcome the two kinds of extremes, the extreme of absolutism and extreme of nihilism. So how does that overcome these two extremes? So when we say something is dependent origination, it is a connotation of dependence. So when something is dependent, it naturally implies the absence of independent mode. So because of the understanding of the absence of independent mode, this saves the person or the practitioner from overcoming the extreme of absolutism or extreme of independent mode of existence. And very soon, say, dependent origination, again, it has the connotation of origination. So when something is originated, when something has the element of origination, it means it should exist. As such, it will then help us overcome the extreme of nihilism. And then, in the eyes of the wisdom of the Arahants, superior beings who have direct insight, non-conceptual insight into emptiness or dependent origination, so in the eyes of that wisdom, no conceptual, no conventional realities arise. So it is because of this that that wisdom which has direct non-conceptual insight into emptiness, in the eyes of that wisdom, there is no duality, there is no concept, no conventional existence, no elaborations arising, no elaborations being perceived in the eyes of that. So it is because of this that the Nagarjuna was then addressing the Buddha Shakyamuni and praising him for having taught this very subtle concept of non-dual emptiness. So it is through the teaching of the dependent origination by Buddha Shakyamuni that Nagarjuna was very much enticed and then started making salutation to him, saying that you alone is the unexcelled teacher who taught the concept of dependent origination to overcome all perverted thoughts. So in order for this wisdom of emptiness to be the remedy or the antidote to delusions, so one must have to have the meditation in order to raise this wisdom of emptiness into the state of pure clarity and pure cognitive aspect. So for to do that, we need to actually make this wisdom of emptiness in a form of the spiritual insight. In Tibet, so this high Soka Tantra is something very popular. So again, in order for this wisdom of emptiness to be the antidote to the to delusions, it should understand, it should have direct non-conceptual experience of emptiness. And again, to have that, we first have to have the experience of the spiritual insight focused on emptiness. And also, it is not just sufficient to have the experience of mere emptiness. Rather, this kind of wisdom has to be something complemented by the method side, that is, the altruist, sense of altruism, sense of great compassion, and bodhicitta. So, in this relation, the High Soka Tantra was quite unpopular in Tibet, China, Japan, and many such countries. So, in China, there already exist the High Soka Tantra. So, again, in order for someone who wants to practice High Soka Tantra, one must have to have the understanding of emptiness as a basis. So because in the High Soka Tantra, it basically comprises the meditation, Deity Yoga meditation. So This deity yoga, or the meditation on the different forms of deity, they are of twofold. First one would be just visualizing a deity in front of you, and then receiving blessings and so forth. So that kind of meditation on the deity is something peripheral, something trivial, and whereas for the most intelligent and intended disciples of the highest yoga tantra, so the kind of the meditation on the yoga, the deity yoga or the deity meditation is to actually rise yourself in the form of deity, rise yourself in the form of deity, rather than visualizing the deity as outside over there. So, again, in order to arise yourself in the deity, so the thing is that you should arise that out of the visualization, out of this very wisdom, or this very wisdom of emptiness. First, you dissolve yourself, this ordinary aspect, into emptiness. So, after dissolving yourself through, dissolving yourself into emptiness, by way of first of all reflecting as to how the self does not exist inherently or truly. So, no sooner you dissolve yourself, the ordinary aspect of yourself, dissolving that into emptiness, then you have this wisdom of emptiness. So this wisdom of emptiness should be the very basis, or this substance, which should be the thing which arises in the form of deity, in the form of the different aspects of deities. So by so doing, that kind of method, that kind of the highest yoga tantra, tantra's technique, would have the ultimate capacity to overcome the subtleties of the obscurations which hinders the practitioner from achieving the high state of enlightenment. So as such, we should also form whether it is of tantric system or sutra system, we see the need of this wisdom of emptiness. So in the case of sutra, we need to have this wisdom of emptiness. Well, first of all, we have to have the understanding of that at the level of conceptual or inferential level. And then we need to upgrade that to the level of direct, non-conceptual perception, so which would then overcome any kind of delusions and the subtleties of the imprints. And whereas in the highest yoga tantra, as I said earlier, so first of all, the basic principle of highest yoga tantra is to first of all dissolve yourself into emptiness. So while you do that, so how the actual process of doing that is first of all trying to raise the understanding of emptiness, trying to generate the understanding of emptiness. So when you generate that, then naturally you when you think about the emptiness of yourself, then you dissolve your ordinary perception, ordinary appearance into emptiness. So after that, so this very wisdom which realizes the emptiness of yourself should serve as the basis, should serve as the substantial basis to arise in the form of deity. So that should be actually the very basic fundamental principle of highest yoga tantra. So if you reflect that way, we see that without understanding emptiness, there is no way by which one can practice even the highest yoga tantra.